Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Desperate House Witches. I am Dorian Wallace, joined as always by my lovely sister, Raina.
Hello.
Yay, you're not on hold.
Yeah, because I heard you unmute it.
Yeah, I still can't figure out what the fuck is going on with that. Because it never used to put you on hold. This only started, a couple months ago?
I don't know. It's probably about 5 or 6 months at this point.
Yeah.
We've been on the air a lot longer than you think we have.
I know. I keep forgetting. It's been almost 2 years now.
In February 22nd will be our second anniversary doing the show.
I'm only 2 years old.
Yeah, and we have changed so fucking much. Oh, let me do my disclaimer. If you are a new listener, this is not a G or PG rated show. I have a very foul temper and a very foul mouth and very foul ideas, but I'm fun. So if you have any children, escort your babies to another room before I really launch, which is about to start in 3, 2, 1. How the fuck is everyone tonight? How do you feel about the government shutting down? Have you noticed the fucking difference? I know I haven't fucking noticed the difference.
Yeah, I was going to say, wouldn't they have to have had to work in the first place to be shutting down? It's like, guys opened? When did that happen?
When did that happen? Hey, give your shout out. I forgot. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's okay. I got to give my shout out to my cousin Jeff. Up in New Jersey. I'm going to send you a knuckle sandwich and a bag of chips. Love you, Jess.
I'm waving at you, Jess. Hi. Anyway, so, you know, there's been so much, and we apologize because the last time Taliesin was on, we had some technical difficulties and the show basically crashed. Well, actually, we didn't crash. Blog Talk Radio crashed. So
he has a DOS attack.
Yeah, well... I thought that was gas, but anyway. the fact of the matter is that I'm sure, considering what's gone on in the past couple of weeks, we have a lot to talk about, especially what's happened this week with quote-unquote Obamacare starting in a real sense. I have to tell you, I at first when they would say Obamacare, it would piss me off. Oh, they're just trying to be insulting, derogatory, fill in the blank. But you know what? It is Obamacare. I like that. Now I've learned to love the term because no one else has been able to get us this far. You know, Hillary tried and it didn't work out because nobody wanted to accept it coming from her at the time. She really didn't have any credentials. And I'm sorry, the people who say, well, she was married to a president, you know, it's kind of like me saying, because I've been with a drummer, that I know how to play the drums. I fucking well don't. So, you know what I'm saying? She needed to get her own credentials. I'm glad she did. She made an amazing Secretary of State. And I think she's going to make the next fabulous president. But that's my personal opinion. But the fact remains that Obamacare is doing a lot of good. Everyone's complaining about, oh, you know, you've got to log into this website and that website, and it's tricky, and it's this, and it takes forever. You know what? I heard an actor say on TV yesterday, if I could wait 6 hours in line to buy an Apple 5S, I could spend 30 minutes trying to log on for some health care. I mean, it's really about priorities and what you value in this world. And let's face it, healthcare, while a lot of us are lucky enough to not need it because we're either young or have been healthy for a long time, with any luck, a lot of us are going to get old. And you know what? Time passes. Things change. So it is a good idea to think about the future. So, and the fact of the matter is that if you have adult children under the age of 27, you can cover them, and it's still cheaper than having them have to go take care of it themselves. So I have to tell you, I'm a big supporter of the whole notion of Obamacare. So I'm sure and between that and John Boehner, Allison's going to have a lot to say tonight.
Oh, yeah, bonehead. Not Allison, Boner. I always call him Boner. I don't care. I know that's not his name, but I don't give shit. It's, you know, I mean, it's seriously like a friggin' temper tantrum. I seriously, I want to take away their cookies and make them sit in a fucking corner.
You know what pisses me off? But the thing that makes me the most aggravated is they're still getting paid. They're not working and they're getting paid. That what kind of bullshit is that? If I went up to my boss tomorrow and I said, oh, by the way, I don't like the direction we're going in, so I'm not going to do my job, but I'm still expecting you to pay me. I cannot tell you how fast I would be fired. I don't even think the speed of light could match how quickly my happy ass would be let go from my job. So I'm sorry. These people need to not be paid until they get back to work.
And there was a couple of them on, I don't even know what it was. I think it was like Nightline or something, you know, that said, oh, well, you know, I'm having my checks held. It's like, yeah, bitch, but you're still going to collect them after this is all done. You didn't say you were going to give up your salary now, did ya? No, you said you're going to have them hold your check, which I'm sure is going to put a huge dent in you know, the amount of gas you can put in your yacht. Woo-hoo.
True enough. True enough.
Yeah. I am not buying that bullshit. Not for
We are not tolerating your nonsense. Anyway, so before we really launch into something, how was your week, my love?
It was actually up and down.
It was actually up and down.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, for a couple of days at least, I'd just been bummed for no reason. Today I was happy, and yesterday I was happier than the day before, but, I mean, there was just, like, 2 or 3 days there where it was just, like, almost felt like I was depressed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I turned around, and I emailed Jade. I'm like, okay. Yeah, Jade's full learning. You guys have heard him on the show before. But I was like, okay, what the hell is going on? That's the reason I'm feeling funky. Why? You know, what is happening? And I guess Mars is in Hydra right now, but it should be leaving tomorrow. So I'm like, okay, so everything will go back to normal. And as far as I know, yes, we gotta go on that.
Yeah. Well, I've had a number of tantrums this week over things that, well, not really tantrums, but I've had a couple of psychological snares this week where I was just like feeling stuck and unhappy. And having the information sometimes helps you get past it. So he says I will be feeling better by tomorrow, or he said shortly after tomorrow. So I'm kind of feeling better because I know that the heaviness is moving on multiple levels. So that's a good thing. I like that very much. And we'll soon be announcing a joint project that Mr. Luna and I are working on, but not yet. Anyway.
Yay. Yeah. I know what it is.
I know. Actually, there's more than we're actually working on two different things, and I'm really excited, but I'm not at liberty to discuss them until I get his permission, which I forgot to ask him for the other night. Oops. But Jade, if you hear this, I won't do anything without your okay. Okay. So there's that. Okay. So while we are waiting for Mr. Talisman, did you bring your
Talisman?
Oh,
crap. They're in my purse downstairs.
So I'm flying solo, am I?
I'm sorry. I'm usually pretty good about it. I usually remember them, but I totally freaking forgot.
You know, and the funny thing is that you usually are better about remembering them than I am. All right, I'm shuffling. You got to sing it.
Every day I'm shuffling.
Am I done?
Yes.
Okay. How many cards am I pulling?
Five.
Such a taskmaster.
You are.
Oh.
Have.
I know. Ooh. This is really weird.
I like the ooze.
Yeah, but this is a little bit strange.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Okay, so the first card, I'm reading from the Buckland Domino Divination deck of the Gypsies, plus his heart. First card is don't gamble, you can't win. The next card is decision time for good or bad. The third card is the third card is a favorable relocation. The fourth card is everything is stable, don't rock the boat. And then business prosperity. This is for three people, and it all reads the same way. So in essence,
cool.
Don't take a chance on something you're not sure about. You are going to have to make a choice, one way or the other. Use your best educated guess to make this decision. Don't go too willy-nilly on this. Think about it first. There is going to be a move. Everything is going to be fine. Don't make any extra problems for yourself after the move. And there will be money coming in. So
yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, that's simple, but it says it right there.
That's awesome.
That's tonight's reading, children.
Yay!
So we took off last week. We took off last week, and we set about doing some stuff. I needed to do some work on some things, and as I usually do at the end of the month, so I apologize for that. It was September was a pretty rough month. A lot of things, you know, from a corporate standpoint, you know, you're about to enter your last quarter of the year. There's a big push for things. It only gets worse at the end of every month from here. But I promise to try and not take too much more time off, although we are going to be off, I think, the 15th or the 16th of November. Is that right, Sis?
I would have to look at the calendar. I'll find out. Just a second. You can keep talking.
I think whatever the second Friday of the month of November is, we will be off. I will be going to, yes, I'm going to say it, I'm going to the Eagles concert. I'm being taken for my birthday, so I'm really excited. So that's a throwback. Just to show you a little bit of how old I really am. But I'm real excited about that. I am. And a lot of people, I understand, are going to the Witch's Ball in Salem. So
yeah.
Everybody who's going, please have a wonderful time. I also want to give a shout out / ask for energy and healing for our friend Rob Grillo.
Yes.
Who slipped his quad this week, was in the hospital, got released, and is now back in the hospital from some complications. We love you, Rob, and we want you better. And as I posted on his page, I said, you have to be well enough to come back on the show and fight with me, because anybody who's ever heard the two of us when he's on the show know that Rob and I get into it politically, and I love him and adore him, but he's fun to fight with. So get better, baby. We love you.
Yeah, definitely. Poor Rob.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's another thing, you know, just for everybody out there on the road, just keep an eye out for bikes, please. I have a lot of friends and some family members who ride bikes, and Rob himself is a bike rider, so just, you know, keep your eyes open. No texting and driving. Okay, lecture done.
I was going to say, I feel like I've been bitch slapped.
No, it's in a very sweet way, but don't mess with my friends.
I totally agree with you. You know, the whole, I have a hard enough time with people who just text, or not text, because that's just stupid and dangerous. I have enough problems with people who are holding the cell phone in one hand and steering with the other. And it's like, you know, I know you think you're a good driver. You're not. Put the fucking phone down. You know, you're not talking, you're not solving world crises by being on the phone. Hang the fucking thing up until you get to your location, unless you have hands free. But keep both hands on the wheel and off your dick, you stupid peckerhead. So, you know, I've seen some shit on the road lately that scares me. I'm just saying, pay attention to what you're doing. But
it's been an interesting
week. Not all of it bad, not all of it good, but you know, we're all muddling through, just trying to get to the next stop. But we'll get through it. It'll be okay. I know we're not the only two who've been going through some weird shit this week. A lot of people are having communication problems. So I think we're gonna be all right. We're gonna be all right.
It's almost like another Mercury retrograde, but, you know, it's like a short one, thankfully. But it's like, okay, we have like three of those sons of bitches every year. We don't need no more. Stop it.
And I've noticed that it seems like the rate of this kind of disruption seems to steadily be increasing, and I don't know why.
Yeah, it's almost like a cycle.
Yeah, it's a recurring, not-so-great cycle. We need to make this stop, and I don't know how.
I think, honestly, it's part of the sloughing off, you know, because a lot of people have been hit with that. You know, and I know I've discussed it before, but with the shedding of people and habits and, you know, just different situations and growing by leaps and bounds. I mean, over the past year and a half, I I have learned the word no, and I love that word. For years I was making myself miserable just trying to make everybody else happy, and it's like, why am I doing this? Because I immediately start, you know, if I get asked to do something and I really don't want to do it, I'm going to wind up resenting myself. You know, because I can't resent the other person because it was my fault for not saying no. But, yeah,
sure.
No has become a very big part of my vocabulary. My life is peaceful now for the most part. I'm just because I still have
fun. I'm so pleased that you've grown into the ability to love yourself more than you love somebody else.
Oh, sorry. Whew. Pulled too much vape off of that one. Anyway, but yeah, it's, you know, I mean, in the end, that's who you're left with. You know, nobody can hear inside your head. nobody can feel exactly what you're feeling. It's you, you know, and if you choose to include other people in your life, that's awesome. But don't forget about numero uno, you know, because we all, I don't know, this was part of my problem. It was like I didn't want to come off seeming conceited or, you know, I really wanted to, you know, somebody to think I'm nice or, you know, and it's like, you know what, I'm okay on my own. I don't have to try that hard, you know, and if somebody doesn't think I'm nice, oh, well, that's their problem, not mine. And I'm babbling. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. No, but the thing is that most people, and, you know, it seems to be more typical of women that we feel like we have to acquiesce and give up, you know, what we want to make someone else happy. And I think, you know, the at least my mother's generation was very much into, you know, well, you sacrifice for your family, and that's a lovely concept. But there comes a point where you have to stop sacrificing for other people. And, you know, there's a limit to how much you should have to put up with to your own discomfort. I mean, of course, when you have children, young children especially, you have to look after their needs and take care of them. But when those children become adults, they're, you know, they're responsible. They have to be responsible for their own life. And you get to be responsible for yourself again and the things you want. And there's really nothing wrong with that. I am very much about, you know, the things that I care about now. You know, I mean, I certainly didn't do it by myself, but my children are raised and they are adults now. And you know what? There's a time after raising children that you get to go back to what you want. And
yeah,
it's very enjoyable, I have to admit. I love them. I worry for them. But by the same token, yeah, I'm kind of about me now. You know, when you get to be a certain age, that's really, you know, you've got to think about what your future holds, and you've got to make the best of whatever time you have left. So I highly encourage people to think a little bit more about themselves. It's a good idea. It's healthy for you. It's good for your kids to see that you have a good self-image and that they are not the only people in the world.
Yeah.
Just my personal opinion as a mother. But I've been at this shit a long time. I think I've got something to say on the matter. What can I tell you? But I'm really excited to talk to Mr. Townsend. Is he going to be on soon?
Yeah, we got about 8 minutes left, so he should be calling in pretty soon.
Awesome.
But yeah, I'm excited to hear what he has to say. Huh?
I know, me too. Anything you want to rant about this week? You want to rave about anything? Rant about anything?
Oh, one thing. One thing.
Okay,
and it's
good.
It's not really a rant, because I think it matters more to this other person than it does to me.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, because it's really kind of like, really, what are you going to get out of this? But yeah, friend, coworker, whatever, has put a spy on my friends list, and it's like, really? Okay. You know, I mean, certain stuff I leave open to the public because I, you know, I don't care, but, you know, there are other things that, yeah, it's just for my friends list.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, I'm seeing these things popping up, and it's like, oh, wow. That's pathetic. It's just stupid. It's like, I'm not that interesting.
You know? I think you're interesting.
Well, I know, that's because you're awesome, and she's not, you know?
You're funny.
I don't really know what to say about it. It's like, okay, have fun, you know?
You know, sometimes people have this vision that it's funny. Did you ever do something really embarrassing and you think everyone is talking about it for days and days and days? The truth of the matter is that after the incident, while it may be the source of a giggle for a couple of hours, people are really more interested in themselves and don't give a shit about what you did that was embarrassing to you. You'll get past it. They'll get over it. Nobody really cares all that much. But there are those people who can't let certain things go, and they just want to keep revisiting these things that have ended. And sometimes you just got to let shit go, you know? But I guess this particular person has not let some things go, even though it would serve them better to do so. But that's all right. Everyone makes their own choices.
Yeah, I find it sad. I really do find it sad. It's like, aw. You know, you purport to have this wonderful jet-setting life or whatever. You're really just a lonely old hag sitting in the house spying on people. Like, hey, you. Have fun with that.
Well, it would serve us better to feel badly for these people, because there's obviously a very small, narrow life going on there. And, you know, I think we should say, bless her and her life, and let her go do what she needs to do. And if this is how she's getting her jollies, go ahead.
Yeah, I really, you know, I don't know. I don't get it. I don't get it. It's like, you know, I mean, for the most part, you know, the people that I cared about, yeah, I've gotten in touch with over, like, Facebook or whatever. But, you know, if you defriend me or I defriend you, that's the end of it. There is no continuing conversation going to go on after that.
Well, some people can't let it go. You know that.
I know. It's sad.
It's a choice to make, to care or not to
right.
care. It's, you know.
To care or not to care? That is the question.
I often just don't. I don't give a flying fig anymore about a lot of things.
Exactly.
The things that bothered me in my 20s no longer have any meaning to me whatsoever. Well, not none of them, but a grand portion of them. Were really
yeah.
meaningless fluff. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. No, I know exactly what you mean. It's like, I can't be bothered. It's like, you know, I'm not playing that game of, you know, having somebody pull your hair on the playground and then running and expecting you to chase them. It's like, no. Because I'll just wait till you tire yourself out, come back around, smack you upside the head, and then go about my merry way. I ain't doing all the fucking work. Hell no. Seriously, I don't run unless something's chasing me. Dorian don't play that game.
No, she
I
doesn't.
I stretch and I dance, but I don't run.
As I've said, this is not a runner's body. I don't run.
Oh,
I'm sorry, guys. I'm in silly. I don't know. I'm just in bloody silly mode right now. I can't make heads nor tails of this whole government shutdown thing. I know it's a ploy. I know it's a game.
Oh.
It's all a game. Politics aren't even really politics anymore. Everything's a bloody game.
Yeah, it's pretty much like we're playing a gigantic game of Monopoly. I just played that. We were teaching the little one how to play Monopoly, and he's not ready for Monopoly, but he wound up in tears.
Aww.
I know, I feel so bad for him.
I think that happens to everybody's kids, though, the first time they play Monopoly, because Monopoly is this great corporate game of how do I fuck you over and get all your money? I mean, it's a cutthroat game. And children are not necessarily immediately geared for cutthroat.
No, because he was like, oh, I'm sorry, Mommy, you wanted that. Here, you can have it. Or you know, you're low on 20s. Here, have mine. You know, because that's the kind of kid he is. He's like, he will give you the shirt off his back at 7 years old rather than upset you.
Uh-huh.
You know? And it's like, because, Daddy decided, you know, he was like, okay, well, you don't have enough money to you know, pay the rent or whatever the hell it is, you know, because he landed on one of his properties with a hotel on it. And I'm like, first of all, you couldn't forgo the hotels. You couldn't just stick to one house, you know, make it a little bit easier for his first time. No, of course not. So it's like, yeah, Daddy wound up, you know, cleaning us all out. I mean, he wound up with every fucking thing. Everything on the board was eventually his. Except for the stuff that he didn't buy. It's like,
Of course.
Yeah. There's a couple properties left or whatever, and it's like, you fucker.
Yeah, you know what? I take it that my brother-in-law is not the type of person who tries to pretty things up if he knows he can win. It's like, fuck you. I'm going to take you bitches down. He doesn't care if it's his own kid. I'm going to rout all of you. Oh, he just doesn't care. Well, that's the way he wins, you know? Ooh, did I say that? That was a horrible thing for me to say.
No, it's totally true. I love him to death, but yeah, he plays that in life too. And it's like, I know that game. You're not playing that with me. It's like, yeah, that's cute, sweetie. Go away. Leave Mama alone, because if you upset Mama, it's not going to be pretty.
Well, you know what they say, happy wife, happy life.
There you go.
Although not necessarily true on any count.
That's true. Yeah. I don't know. I want to shoot Talisman a message here real quick.
Good idea.
Where is he?
Talisman.
I always put the E before the I. Why do I do that?
I don't know.
Okay, I don't see it. Oh, there he is.
You found the guest? That's probably
no, no, no. No, I'm looking at his. There he is.
Yay.
Hello.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, darling. How are you?
Hold on, just 1 second. Let me plug this phone in here.
Okay.
He's
plugging. Oh, my God, I can hear the neighbor's kids outside. Like 9:30.
Really?
Yeah, what are they doing? And they're little kids, too.
I don't know.
Why don't you know?
Hopefully everybody's okay.
You're fine. They're out there playing.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
As long as the children are okay and nobody has to barbecue them, we're okay. Barbecue, baby.
Yeah. It's like, hey, why don't you come in and how did he go back on hold?
Hello.
Okay.
I hit the wrong damn button on the phone when I was plugging it in. So.
Oh, okay. I was like, wait a minute, why is he on hold again? I'm like, oh, God, please don't tell me this is going to happen again.
No, it was operator error on my end.
Okay, and again,
well,
We apologize profusely for the last show. apparently, they had a DOS attack on Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I was like, are you kidding me?
Well,
so
that's
anyway,
what they'll tell you it is. They don't want to say that a couple of people were stepping in the server room and hit the power button accidentally or anything like that. So, no, it was a denial of service attack, man. It was hackers. We're lucky we got out of there alive, man. So, yeah.
So, Mr. Salzen, we have been waiting all month to get the update on what now has become the shutdown and the beginning of Obamacare. So I am sure you have a ton of information.
Oh yeah. Oh God. Yes. This is the government shutdown to the next generation, also known as Newt Gingrich looking and going, really, guys, really. Didn't me fisting myself with no lube back in the 90s teach you guys any fucking lessons?
Apparently not.
Seriously not. Well, you know, so the hardcore jihadists got their wish and they shut the government down. And this is something that they've been working on since 2010, ever since they retook the House, the majority in the House in the 2010 midterms. They've been itching to shut the government down. They've been threatening it every 3 or 4 months like fucking clockwork. Yeah, so they finally got a chance to do it, and it's really, really interesting the way this is going, because I live in Ohio, and the Ohio Republican Party is so completely, totally incompetent that the Republicans in Ohio actually control both houses of the state legislature and the governor's office, and they still don't get anything done because they don't like each other. It's one of the most disorganized states. But the Ohio Republican Party is like showing a preview of what the national party is bringing us. Now, I'll tell you what it is that the Ohio Republican Party sometimes gets into these games of how ridiculous can we get? How fucking moronic can we get? How batshit crazy can we get in like picking our politicians and picking our issues before even Ohio Republicans look at us and go, oh, hell no, I can't. Oh, hell no, I can't. It happened like a good 6-7 years ago when the Republicans were running to try to keep the governorship after good old Bob Taft did his 2 terms and out. And they ran a guy named Ken Blackwell. And this was a guy he was a black Republican, which is such a rare thing. I think the entire paradox of it snapped the poor guy's brain. Because the guy was batshit crazy. I mean, literally batshit. He made Ted Cruz look like Ted Kennedy. This guy was so whacked out.
Wow.
And even Ohio Republicans had to go, dude, no, we can't, no. You know, it's like one of those frat jokes gone horribly wrong. You know what I mean? It's like, no. And now the National Republican Party is doing the same thing. I mean, literally a poll was released right before the shutdown happened that showed not only do 80% of the people in this country not want the government shut down, but a good 75 to 80% of people who don't like Obamacare and would like to get rid of it, even they don't think that shutting down the government over it was a good idea. And as a matter of fact, as far as making a stand, this isn't really where the main people in the Republican Party wanted to make their stand, but the John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, has lost control of his own caucus so badly that it just kind of happened, even though nobody other than Ted Cruz and a couple of dead enders from the young Al-Qaeda branch of the Republican Party wanted to do this. It really just kind of took everybody by surprise, and none of them want to be the one to stand up and say stop, and so it just kind of rolled right over them. It's kind of really pathetic when you look at exactly how it happened, because it's not like the days of Dick Cheney being the evil mastermind scheming behind the scenes are over. I mean, these guys are making like your basic, Larry the Cable Guy. These guys all look like Larry the Cable Guys, only not so smart.
Wow.
Bumbling into shit. So, I mean, literally, it's basically all along. Everybody kept saying, "Oh well, you know, they're going to have a clean, you know, they're going to have a continuing resolution to keep the government open," and a clean one just never happened.
Right.
Now, to really understand where we're at when it comes to the government, you have to understand that normally the way the government's supposed to work is there's a budget passed by Congress and signed by the president, and that lays out how much money government can spend on this, that, or the other thing. Growing up, that's how they always did it. They would usually, the president would submit a budget, and the Congress would look and pat the president's budget on the head, very nice, and then send it off to go play because they weren't going to take it seriously. And that's even when the Congress and the president were the same party. Congress never takes a president's budget seriously, ever. But usually a president proposes a budget, and then the Congress takes it, throws it out, and puts their own budget together. And the various factions in Congress argue, and they compromise, and they vote for, they vote against. And eventually they get a budget deal hammered out, and then they send it up to the president. The president signs it, and the government operates on a budget. We haven't had a budget in this government for over a decade.
Wow.
Yeah, because what happened was that when the Democrats took over in 2006, when they took over the Senate in 2006, they actually took the House too. They, you know, basically at that point, the House and the Senate and the president were not going to agree on a budget. And so there was no budget passed. Now, of course, the government can't function if they don't allocate money for it. So what they do are these things called continuing resolutions. A continuing resolution is like a mini budget. It's like only like four or five pages. It basically says that the government is authorized to keep spending money at the exact rate that it's spending money right now. And then if there's any increases or decreases in spending, those are taken care of on their own individual bills or on individual pieces of legislation. It's kind of like if you took a budget and broke it up into 2,000 pieces and passed them one piece at a time with these continuing resolutions every once in a while saying, yes, the government can keep spending money. And that's how we've been operating for the last 10 years, because as soon as Barack Obama got elected, well, I mean, they were starting to put together a budget process, but the Republicans had enough votes in the Senate to be able to block all the budgets with a simple filibuster, so they haven't let there be a budget go through. And now, ever since the Republicans took control of the House, they keep passing something known as the Paul Ryan budget. That's really not a budget. The Paul Ryan budget doesn't actually sit down and say we're going to spend X amount of money for this, that, and the other thing. The Paul Ryan budget is more of a statement of principles that says that we're going to get rid of Social Security, we're going to get rid of Medicare, we're going to gut Medicaid, and we're going to take all this money and use it to pay for more tax breaks for millionaires, but we're going to call it a deficit reduction plan, even though it adds $200 billion onto the deficit. And that's all the House has been passing for the past ever since 2010. For the past 3 years, two and a half, 3 years, that's all the Congress has been passing, is the House has been passing the Paul Ryan fantasy, and the Senate looks at it and goes, ha, 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 that's funny, let's work on a budget. And then the Senate works on a budget, and the House says, ha, 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 that's funny, because that actually wants to spend money on things that will help people, and we don't want to do that. And so we just keep having these continuing resolutions once every how often. Sometimes they're for 6 weeks, sometimes they're for 6 months. So this time when the continuing resolution rolled around, after 42 votes to repeal Obamacare that went nowhere in the House, somebody in the House had the brilliant idea of let's go ahead and add onto the continuing resolution to keep the government open language that defunds Obamacare, which, of course, they knew would be dead on arrival in the Senate. And even if the Senate, for some reason, got really drunk and passed it anyway, the president was going to veto it. There was no way that this was going to go through. But the Republicans have convinced themselves that somehow, if they just keep doing this, that the people are going to rise up and demand that government take away their health care that they're just starting to get now. And so that's kind of like where they've been operating under. And then since the gambit to defund Obamacare was failing so incredibly spectacularly, then other House members decided that they wanted to add their own particular causes onto the continuing resolution and wound up with a laundry list of 29 demands that the Democrats and the president would have to meet in order for the Republicans to agree to keep the government open, including things like letting your employer tell a woman whether she can or can't have birth control. They wanted to put language on there that would approve the Keystone XL pipeline. They wanted language in there that was going to take away the EPA's ability to regulate carbon emissions. They wanted to pass the Monsanto Protection Act into permanent status. They wanted to gut clean air, clean water regulations. They wanted to institute a nationwide ban on abortions after 20 weeks. They wanted literally everything they tacked onto this, as if failing on Obamacare wasn't enough. They decided they're just going to fail spectacularly on everything. And that's where we've been at. And it's really funny because the Democrats and President Obama, every time Boehner's like, okay, well, you know what, we'll do this. You guys will go along with this, right? Harry Reid and President Obama are going, no, we're not going to, you're not going to get a reward for shutting down the government. Reopen the government and then we'll talk about this other stuff. In other words, reopen the government and then we can tell you to go fuck yourself even more. And so that's where we're at. The Republicans keep throwing all these things out there, and the president and Harry Reid in the Senate keep saying, no, I don't think so, simply because this president doesn't negotiate with terrorists. So that's kind of where we're at right now.
So basically, we're in a stalemate right now.
Kind of. See, what it is that you need 217 votes in the House of Representatives to pass a bill. There are 200 Democrats. We know that there are more than 17 Republicans who'd like to pass a clean continuing resolution with no amendments, no additives, no bullshit. We know that we have enough votes in the House. What's going on, though, is that John Boehner, as the Speaker of the House, will not allow a clean continuing resolution with no conditions to come up for a vote. The Speaker of the House is a very powerful position. The Speaker himself decides every single piece of legislation that gets voted on. And even though you've got somewhere around 300 people in the House that want to vote to reopen the government with no conditions, John Boehner won't bring it to a vote because he knows that there is a large number of jihadist House members who want to get rid of him. And he knows that if he actually works with Democrats to bring a clean continuing resolution up to the floor, that that's going to lead to open revolt and he'll probably lose the Speaker's job. Of course, the guy already has the reputation of being the absolute weakest, most ineffective, useless Speaker of the House in history. So personally, if I were him, I'd be like, please take my job. I want to get out from dealing with you fuckwads. But no, what's going on now is that Democrats are starting to take legislation that had been sitting in the House, unacted on, to keep the government open, and they're turning them into what are called discharge petitions. Now, a discharge petition is where a bunch of House members get together and sign this piece of paper that says, we want to vote on this bill. And if they get enough people signing a petition that say, we want to vote on this bill, then the bill comes up for a vote no matter what the Speaker of the House does. And the House members are trying to find the right piece of legislation to turn into a discharge petition where they could bring it up. It could be voted on, a clean continuing resolution that would get passed through without Speaker Bonehead's help. And then it could just go to the Senate, go to the president, boom, the government's reopened. So that's what Nancy Pelosi and the true patriots on the Democratic side are working on right now.
Wow.
And I say true patriot after Nancy Pelosi because I know it makes right-wingers' heads explode. So that's our best bet right now because Boehner is terrified. See, that's the thing. There's only 30 or 40 people in the House who are actually members of the Tea Party. But Boehner's terrified of these guys because they're very, very loud. They're killing Republican fundraising. I'll tell you that much right now. There's a lot of traditional Republican donors who do not want to give money right now because of the way the Tea Party is running everything. But Boehner is just he's incredibly weak. He has absolutely no leverage, and he is kind of sitting back and letting the lunatics run the asylum. So hopefully the Democrats can get what they need together to actually get this logjam broken.
Well, the fact of the matter is that Obamacare is now the law of the land. That's it. It's been passed. It's
yes, it
law.
Is. It is open for business.
So there's nothing. Is there anything that they can do to stop it or derail it or take it away at this point?
Well, outside of an outright repeal, the only way they could do it is known as defunding it. Basically, where Congress passes a law that says absolutely zero government money can be used to fund enforcement of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. That's not going to happen because the Democrats control the Senate and President Obama would veto such a bill, and the Republicans control the House, but they do not have two-thirds majority even in the House, and they don't control the Senate at all. So defunding Obamacare isn't going to happen. Really, I mean, what people are pointing out is that if the American people really wanted to get rid of Obamacare, they could have elected Mitt Romney because Mitt Romney pledged to do just that. Blocked implementation, basically, and all that stuff. They didn't. Obamacare passed both houses of the Congress. It was signed into law by the president. It was backed up by the Supreme Court, and it was reaffirmed in the last election. So it is the law of the land. It is, as a matter of fact, the biggest concern the people had who are pro-Obamacare was the idea that Republicans have been muddying the water so much, they're afraid that a lot of people wouldn't start signing up right away because of all of the confusing misinformation that's been thrown out there. But they had so many people wanting to sign up on day one of Obamacare that the servers crashed. So that's actually kind of that's a snafu, but it's a happy snafu. So, I mean, some places like in New York State, health insurance premiums are already going down by 50%. So, and in California, they're going down by somewhere around 35%. Nationwide, they're going to go down somewhere between 15 and 55%, depending on what area you live in.
That's stunning. That is absolutely stunning. And, please explain to me, I've been watching, okay, so when I'm watching TV and I see this ad of this old woman saying that, you know, her health care is in jeopardy because she can't see the doctor of her choice. What is the truth behind that?
Well, that's just known as managed care, and that's the system that most of us have here. I mean, let's face it, it's like during when they were debating health insurance reform. Stephen Colbert gave the infamous quote of saying, "I don't want a government bureaucrat standing between me and my doctor. That's the place for my insurance company to stand." And that's really what it is. The thing about the Affordable Care Act is that there is no government health insurance involved in it. There's not even a public option, which a lot of us wanted. What basically the way that the Affordable Care Act works is that there are these things known as insurance exchanges. And these are websites where people can go. A lot of them are being run by the state, although because of Republican resistance, about half of the exchanges are being run by the federal government for various states. And the way it saves you money is you go to this website and you can look and you can see, okay, these are the companies that offer health insurance in my area. Company A offers hold on. What's up? Hold on. A neighbor girl is sleeping over. So, the way that it works is that you sign up onto the website, and then you can look and see, okay, these are the companies that offer health insurance in my area. Company number one is offering this plan at this much money, and this is what it covers. Company B is offering the same plan for a different amount of money, and here's what it covers. And basically, you're able to look at the different plans that the health insurance companies offer. These are private health insurance companies. None of that's changing. But you can just look at them side by side with no advertising, no glossy brochures, no confusing language, just company A is offering X amount of coverage for this amount of money. Company B is offering X amount of coverage for this amount of money. And you can just take a look and see which one is going to give you the best deal. And most companies offer different levels. They call them like bronze, silver, gold plans, depending on what they cover. And the ones that cover a lot more tend to cost more. But the reason why this is bringing health insurance premiums down is because the companies are, you're looking at stuff unbiased. It's just literally like Blue Cross Blue Shield is offering me for $200 a month, this is what they're going to cover, and Aetna is offering me the same amount of coverage, but they're only charging me $150. Well, of course you're going to go with the one that's less expensive. And the reason why this is bringing health insurance rates down is that in places like Colorado and New York, where they set up health insurance exchanges early just to test mm-hmm. out the system, the various health insurance companies were realizing that, okay, wow, all of our competitors are offering more coverage for a cheaper amount than what we're offering. We're going to get buried. We're going to lose all our people. If people mm-hmm. can see, you know, if we keep charging this amount of money for this plan. So they're voluntarily cutting their rates. It's basically free market capitalism. And this is something to throw up at all the right-wingers, you know, who are claiming that Obamacare is socialism. Obamacare is fueled by free market capitalism. Company A is offering me more services for less money, so that's who I'm going to go with. And if Company B wants to compete, they've either got to offer more services or charge less money. That's the heart and soul of Obamacare, is letting people look at the marketplace and deciding what's the best value for their buck. Now, everything else that people have complained about on there, like the individual mandate. Well, the way mm-hmm. insurance works is that people who aren't sick, who buy insurance, they make up for the people who are sick and who need to file a claim. It's called a share risk pool. And that's the way insurance works in general. And when Affordable Care Act said, well, no insurance company can deny someone coverage for a pre-existing condition anymore, the health insurance companies are saying, well, if we get all these sick people on, we're going to go on. We're not going to be able to make any money. So basically the idea is young people or people who are really healthy, people who make enough money. If you make enough money to be able to afford health insurance, but you choose not to buy it, then you're going to pay a fine. And the money you pay into is going to go to pay for uninsured people like you who get sick. I mean, the way things happen right now is you get a lot of younger people who decide not to get health insurance because they have this invincibility factor going on with themselves. They're like, uh-huh. I'm young. Young people think they'll live forever, and they just don't really think that they're going to need it, so they don't buy it. But then these people get sick, or they get into an accident. They get injured. Yeah. They need health care. They have no insurance. What happens is that a lot of times, even though they're making enough money to afford insurance, they're not making nearly enough money to pay their medical bills without insurance. So their medical bills wind up getting picked up by everybody else who owns insurance because the hospitals raise their rates. They charge the insurance companies more. The insurance companies then raise everybody else's rates to pay for these people who need health care but never bothered to get insurance. So basically the individual mandate says if you choose not to get insurance and yet you make plenty of money to be able to afford it, well, you're going to have to pay into a fund that'll pay for your ass if you do need medical care later. And it's very basic stuff, but the vast majority of the Affordable Care Act is free market capitalism, only stripping away all the advertising, stripping away all the bullshit, and letting companies compete for your healthcare dollar. And of course, if you don't make enough money, which I would guess that you, me, most of the people listening to this show, we don't make enough money to pay a fine. Most of us are going to be so broke that we're going to get a government subsidy every year to help us pay for our own individual insurance. And that's another thing that's going to be happening here, is that when you can't afford to buy your individual insurance, the government's going to give you a voucher to help you pay for it. And it's going to help people get insurance that they could never get before. So yeah. It's already insuring more people. It's already bringing rates down radically in a lot of states. It's already working. And that's what the Republicans have feared all along. They feared that it was going to work because their whole governing principle is the idea that government never works, that everything right. government can do, the private sector can do better. And here's an instance where the government is managing a private sector program, and it's going to be so successful, it's going to completely ruin their abilities to bullshit people on that anymore. Now, that's the thing. It's a lot of these stories that people have been swapping around saying, oh, this is going to be terrible, this is going to be horrible. These are all things people are saying were happening before Obamacare went into effect. See, ever since right. the Supreme Court upheld Obamacare, Health insurance companies and businesses have been doing some last-minute looting. They've been hiking people's rates. They've been cutting their services. They've been cutting workers' hours. And they've been saying, oh, it's all because of Obamacare, even though Obamacare wasn't in effect yet. What they're doing is they realize that once Obamacare is fully in effect, they're not going to be able to rip people off like this anymore. So they're doing some last-minute looting before the law fully went into effect. It's already up and running, and by this time next year, people are going to be amazed at just what kind of an impact it's going to have in a lot of regular people's lives.
Well, that's a relief. I personally am all for it, and always was. I'm sorry. Sis,
now,
go ahead.
If you want to fuck with somebody on the right wing, you should ask them, who came up with most of the stuff in Obamacare? And the answer, none of them can tell you this, by the way. Almost none of them could ever tell you this. They don't want to admit it. It was the plans for the Affordable Care Act were first dreamed up by the ultra-conservative, ultra-right-wing Heritage Foundation in the early 1990s. And it was their conservative answer to Hillary Care. When the Clintons tried to get universal health care in the early 90s, and they were trying to get a U.S. version of single-payer health care. And the Republicans' answer to that was things like insurance exchanges and the individual mandate and all this stuff, a lot of stuff that wound up in Obamacare. And, in fact, Republicans were pushing all the stuff in Obamacare for 15, 16 years, saying, if you want to do health care reform, this is how you do it. When Mitt Romney decided to do health care reform in Massachusetts, he looked at the Heritage Foundation model, and that was the basis for Romney Care. It wasn't until President Obama got elected into office and decided, I'm going to do health care reform, he wanted to have a form of health care reform that was bipartisan. He wanted to have Democrats and Republicans voting for a plan because he figured it would be easier to sell it to the American people if it looked bipartisan. So what he did is he took the Republican plan. He took about 80% of the old Republican plan and made that the basis for his health care reform bill. But because it was the black guy wanting it, all of a sudden the Republicans had to oppose what just as recently as 2 or 3 weeks before President Obama proposed the Affordable Care Act, 2 or 3 weeks before that, a bunch of Republicans were pushing it as the solution to health care reform. And when President Obama came out in favor of it, they all of a sudden decided they didn't like it anymore. And they've claimed that they didn't like it since. But it was their own plan.
It's amazing.
I just don't understand the childishness of the entire party at this point. You know, I mean, some of them are starting to come to their senses, but I mean, for the most part, it seems like they actually hate us.
Well, what happened was, is that you have to understand what happened to conservatism in the late 1990s, early 2000s, basically during the end of the Clinton era and the George W. Bush era, conservatism changed. And see, conservatism used to be a political philosophy. It was a political philosophy masquerading as an economic policy for a very long time. And what happened over the years, however, is that people, like individual Republicans' dedication to conservatism changed. And it changed in tone and timbre from a political philosophy to religious belief. I mean, it's literally, I think what happened was is that when the hardcore right-wing fundy Christians wound up getting integrated into the Republican Party after good old Ronnie Reagan brought them in the 1980s, that changed things. Because then you had people who were well-practiced at being religious fanatics all of a sudden adopting conservatism as an adjunct onto their pseudo-Christianity. And so basically it's gotten to the point where modern conservatism does exhibit a lot of the traces of religious extremism. I mean, when George W. Bush finally left office and he was such a universal failure, all you could hear the conservative pundits over and over were saying that George W. Bush wasn't a real conservative. And that's why he failed, because he was only a make-believe conservative. And that's also their excuse as to why they've lost the last couple of presidential races, because John McCain and Mitt Romney weren't real conservatives. That if the Republicans had run a real conservative, they would have won, because these guys were phony conservatives. See, there's no, according to the right wing, conservatism as a philosophy can never fail. People mm-hmm. will fail conservatism, but conservatism cannot fail, because they view it almost as a religious doctrine. Like the idea that supply-side economics doesn't work, but they keep saying it over and over again, like it's a religious dogma. The yep. idea that abstinence-based sex education does not work. We've got the science to show it does not work. But, of course, Stephen Colbert has noticed that, you know, reality does have a well-known liberal bias. It's like what it is that you've got a whole generation of conservatives that came up in the last 20 years who their mode of conservatism wasn't so much a political philosophy as it was a quasi-religious belief. And so now you've got a whole bunch of people, all the jihadists in the House and the few genuine jihadists that are in the Senate, their attitude is that they would rather go down and lose than compromise their principles. They would rather lose being right than win by giving the other side anything. So that is where they're at. They would if they lost control of the House next year, which, by the way, is looking more increasingly possible, because even red states are going, oh, you guys are fucked. But even if Republicans lose control of the House next year, you're going to see people like fucking Ted Cruz, who's a senator, but he's been manipulating the House all along. He's going to say that was a victory for conservative values, because better to lose being pure than to win by compromise. So the very thing that these guys have built up to try to further their goals are trapping them, and they're warping them. Like the entire right-wing media machine, which is a very, very well-oiled machine, it's trapped them, because they live in the world of Fox News. They live in the world of the Rush Limbaugh show. So they don't hear anything that counters their ideology. So when they go out there and they say that, you know, we're going to pass this continuing resolution defunding Obamacare and rescinding the Emancipation Proclamation, and the American people are just going to fall in behind us, they genuinely think that this is going to happen. This isn't spin. They really think that this could work. And when it doesn't work, their attitude is, well, we just got to do it again. It'll work this time. One of the reasons why John Boehner is such a weak speaker is one thing that they did, one reform that they did when they took over the House, which is really the stupidest thing that they ever could have done, is they got rid of something called earmarks. Now, earmarks are little bits that you put into a bill where you can spend money in a way that a senator or a representative likes. Like, for example, let's say I'm the representative of my area and I want to bring some federal jobs to my area, I would get an earmark that would earmark like $20 million to fix all the bridges in my county or something like that. And that's federal. And that earmark brings federal money to my area, puts people to work, makes my local people like me. Well, when the earmarks had been abused, earmarks are always abused. Earmarks are – there's ridiculous fucking things put into earmarks. Literally, in a bill that's meant to fund the military, somebody will slip an earmark that pays to study the migration habits of water buffalo in Nebraska or something like that. Earmarks regularly get abused, but what they are is they're a way for leadership to control their people. They'll say, look, I know you don't want to vote for this bill, but if you vote for this bill, we're going to slip in something into the bill that you've been wanting. So like money to fund your local university getting a new football stadium, something like that. And it's a way that leaders have been able to twist the arms of people in the past by saying, okay, if you reverse yourself on this, we're going to send millions of dollars to your district, which is going to help you when it comes time to be reelected. But when the Republicans took over in 2010, they ended earmarks. They banned earmarks. The House has been going for 3 years now without a single earmark. But what that also means is that when John Boehner really needs Republicans to do something that they don't want to do, he's got no leverage. He can't do anything to punish them if they openly defy him. So they're just completely not listening to the guy. He's the weakest speaker in the history of the Congress, and that's saying something.
Wow.
Yeah.
So are they on their way out? Are they a dying species yet?
Well, when you take a look at it, the pollsters do something known as a generic congressional ballot, where they will say, they'll poll people, and this is literally the question. They say, okay, if the election were held today for the House of Representatives from your area, would you vote for a Democrat or a Republican? That's called a generic. They don't mention names. Now, these are always considered, usually certain areas are going to do certain well. Like, for example, if you ask that question in California, the answer 90% of the time is going to be, we're voting for the Democrat, because it's a very blue state. Same, too, with, like, Massachusetts and New York and that kind of thing. Safe Democratic states, people usually answer Democrat. The only reason that they'd usually change their mind is if the Democrats nominate somebody who people just really don't like as the Democrat, and then they might switch to the other party. So they've been doing generic congressional ballots, and they've been going into places, again, like Texas, Oklahoma, Mississippi, Georgia. We're talking the deepest red of the red states. And in the generic matchup, would you vote for the Republican or the Democrat? Republicans have lost 15 points in the last week.
Wow.
So, yeah. Now, that changes because when you bring up, like, oh, well, you know, how about, you know, how about this guy, you know, and it'll be like some guy who's been, you know, a representative, a Republican representative from that area for 15 years. You know, that's serious incumbency. They have a real advantage. The other thing is sometimes, you know, when you, like, bring in, well, here's the challenger, and it's somebody you know, and it's somebody you like, that can change things too. But the generic balloting is shifting, and it's shifting dramatically. It's a bad indicator because every race is particular to the people who are involved in it. But the thing about the lagging, generic ballot choice and the generic ballot question is what that really affects later is fundraising. Because when the Republican Party comes knocking on the door of their are you still there? I just dropped a cord here.
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, when the Republican Party comes knocking on the door, the people who normally give them money and say, okay, we're getting ready to take it to the Democrats next year, we need you to give us money to fund us. When people are as pissed off at the Republicans as they are right now, on the Republican side, the answer is usually, no, you're not getting money right now. Call me back in 3 months. Call me back in 4 months. Call me back in 6 months. Call me back when you've got a fucking clue, is usually what people wind up saying. But it really, really hurts fundraising. And I'll tell you, I'm starting to see the results of it right now because I don't know who it was, but somebody in the Republican Party thought it was a really funny idea to put my email on their email list.
Wow.
So I've been getting all kinds of fun stuff from Rince Priebus and the Republican RNC mailbag. And so I'm seeing what kind of stuff they're sending out to their supporters. It's really funny because, of course, they always do this thing where they'll be like, okay, blah, 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 let's whip you up. Let's say something that we think is going to piss you off, and now we're going to go and fight it, yada, yada, yada. I mean, I get this shit from the Democrats all the time. I think Kelly Ward and Lindsay Seiler must have me on speed dial because I get like 3 or 4 emails from these two women every day, me and about, you know, 3 or 4 million other Democrats.
Right.
But after they go over whatever their issue is, there's the money ask. And where they ask you to help them fund this particular fight. And the thing that I'm noticing is that the Republican money asks are getting bigger. And normally money asks only get bigger when somebody donates. So, for example, like with the Democrats, they'll send you an email and they'll say, well, we need your help. Will you give us $3 to help fight this fight? Let's say you give them $3. The next time they send you an email, they're going to ask for $4. And then if you get $4, they'll ask for $5. So they just want to see where your natural cutoff point is. But it's also a different fundraising ethos, the idea of crowdsourcing, the idea that this was something pioneered by the Obama campaign, and their attitude was, we don't need to go and ask a corporate lobbyist for $3 million, because if we get a million people to give us $3, we just got $3 million, and we don't have to worry about a lobbyist coming and asking for favors later. The average contribution to Barack Obama's reelection campaign was $50, because they had so many $3, $4, and $5 contributions that it averaged out to about $50 per contribution in his last campaign.
Wow.
It's a great way of really making the whole funding system democratic. But the thing is, you don't want your initial ask to be too big. You want it to be something that seems almost insignificant. Like, hey, you know, for whatever it costs to get a Starbucks Frappuccino, give us the $3 instead, and we're going to use it to fight the good fight for you. People are likely to do that. I have done that a couple of times. I've been like, okay, fuck it. Here's your $3, okay? Go on and, you know, knock yourself out. And the thing is, the idea is that you don't want to go too big, because if you ask for too much, it makes people gun-shy. It either makes you look greedy or it makes you look desperate. The last two emails I got from the Republicans were asking for – one was asking for $14. The other was asking for $20. And, I mean, it's not so much that they assume that all their people are rich so they can afford it. I think what's really going on here is that their fundraising is so shitty that when they do have somebody who's willing to give them a donation, they're afraid of asking for too little because they're not getting that many. As a matter of fact, when the last fundraising totals came out, the Democrats had outraised the Republicans by a 6-to-1 margin.
Wow.
And that's because the Democrats are going out and getting these $2, $3, and $4 donations. The Republicans had a very, very bad return on their investment in the last election. Some of their normal backers, like the NRA, for all the money it spent on the election, it only had a return of less than 0.5%. So in other words, 99.5% of all the money the NRA spent on the last election went to supporting losing candidates. Yeah, that was disastrous. As a matter of fact, most of your biggest Republican fundraising organizations wound up, they only had like maybe an 8 or 9% return rate. So in other words, over 90% of all the money they spent was wasted because it was spent on races that they lost. The big ticket donors are not in a hurry to give right now because the corporate guys are terrified of the jihadists. They like their votes and they like their ability to get out there and be foot soldiers for them, but they're really terrified that the jihadists are going to try to keep the debt ceiling from being raised, which would wind up screwing up the economy so badly that most people who normally vote Republican would wind up losing millions of dollars. It would be a big-time disaster. And all the finance guys are saying, come on, you guys can't play like this anymore. You're going to screw up our business. But the Tea Party people don't care. They would rather go down and lose being pure than win not being pure. And that terrifies the finance guys. So the finance guys aren't opening up their wallets a whole lot either right now. Republican fundraising is just plain shitty right now. And it's a really good thing, too, because that means the people on the Democratic side who are able to raise big money, like Bloomberg and those types of people, they're able to put money into a race and just completely flatten the Republicans. So things are looking up for next year. I think we've got a fighting chance of retaking the House.
Oh, yay.
All we need to win are 18 seats. That's all we need. We need to not lose any seats, and we need to win 18 seats. So it's not an impossible task.
Wow.
I hope so. I don't know what to say about them. You know, it's...
Well, what I want to know is how long do we think this shutdown is actually going to last, and what's going to have to be done to get us out of it?
Well, that is questionable right now because the Republicans are trying another gambit right now because they've noticed that there are some things that are really, really unpopular. Like when people found out that the National Institute of Health was having to turn kids with cancer away from cancer treatments, because of the government shutdown, all of a sudden Republicans started saying, well, maybe we should pass a bill that would reopen that one thing. And Democrats are saying, no, we're not going to let you open up the government one department at a time. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of money. We're not doing it. Now, Republicans are going to really try to push this because things like national monuments, national parks, and cancer treatments for sick kids, those are things that they're really feeling the heat on. They're also going to start feeling the heat very soon because in half the states, the WIC program is not operating right now. And in the other half of the states, the WIC program is going because they had some extra money in those states. But by mid-month, the WIC program nationwide is going to be non-functioning because it's a federal program, and it shuts down with the government. The Republicans are really going to try to push this piecemeal fashion where they can reopen some things but not other things, and the Democrats are saying, no way. You know, you guys, look, open the government, and then we'll talk about everything. We'll talk about, you know, entitlements, we'll talk about budgets, we'll talk about everything, but you have to reopen the government first. And that's been their line. And as long as they hold on to that line, I think we're looking at a maximum amount of time of maybe 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, before either a discharge petition gets enough people or Boehner just caves, one of the two. If the Democrats start allowing the government to open one department at a time, Republicans will want to drag this out for months. So sure. It's just important that the Democrats keep their spine. And I'll tell you, Harry Reid has been fucking awesome in this. He's just been like just over and over again saying, look, we wanted to negotiate with you guys over a budget, but we're not going to do it with a gun to our heads. So if you reopen the government, we'll go into conference and talk about a budget. The reason why the Republicans have not wanted to go into a conference committee to hash out a budget between the Senate and the House is because when things are hashed out in a conference committee, those bills are not – they can't be filibustered. Uh-huh. If it's a conference bill that was put together by the House and the Senate at the same time, the Republicans in the House can't filibuster it. So if anything gets in there that the Republicans don't like, they're stuck with a simple majority. And that's why they've been avoiding going to a conference committee. The Republicans want to go into a conference just to negotiate to reopen the government for 6 weeks. And then in a month and a half, we'll be right back where we're at right now. So the Democrats are saying no. Fund the continuing resolution, open the government for the rest of the year, and then we'll sit down and talk budget with you guys. I'm saying it'll probably go through till the end of next week unless something major happens. But as long as the Democrats can stay firm, I think that the Republicans are going to cave by mid-month.
Well, actually, I just got a message from one of our listeners. It says, House Democrats announced Friday that they will try to force the House to vote on a measure to fully fund the government and end the shutdown with a procedural motion known as a discharge petition.
Yes, the discharge petition that I was telling you about, that's what Nancy Pelosi and the other Democrats have been looking to form a discharge position where if enough members of the House sign it, it brings the matter of continuing to fund the government up for a vote without John Boehner. And you have 200 Democrats who are ready to do it. All they need to do is to get 17 Republicans to sign the discharge position. If they can get seven – and mind you, remember, there are Republicans – there are a couple of Republican members of the House from New England. There are Republicans in the House from California. There are a few Republicans in the House from Washington State and Oregon State. These are deep blue areas. And if these people really think their jobs are in danger, the Democrats could get them to sign a discharge position, bringing the matter up to a vote, and also get them to vote to reopen government. So they're going to try to force the hand on Friday. Now, Boehner's going to try to delay and obfuscate. So that's, you know, if that works, we can have the government open by Monday. If it doesn't work, then we're probably going to look at another week and a half or so before Boehner caves.
Okay. I think this is a caving situation. This looks like a cave. Somebody's going to have to give in, and this time I don't think it's going to be us.
No, it's not going to be us. It's not going to be us at all because the Democrats full and well know that if they give in on anything here, even if they just give in and go to a conference committee to negotiate to keep the government open for another 6 weeks, then the debt ceiling is going to come up, and then you're going to have Republicans who have already said that they want to try. I mean, there are Republicans who want to try to force a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage through the Congress as a condition of not defaulting on our debts. Yes. So, and so the Democrats know that if they give anything to the Republicans on this, anything at all, then the debt ceiling fight is going to be even worse. And that has much higher stakes, by the way. The debt ceiling has much, much higher stakes. Because if we don't raise the debt ceiling, if the U.S. defaults on its debt, not only does it tank our economy in a way that makes the Great Depression look like economic burp, but it also can cause a worldwide recession or depression that could wreck the world economy for at least a decade. So that's what the Republicans are playing with here by trying to say that they're going to, you know, not raise the debt ceiling. And again, when we talk to people, when we argue with people, we have to make sure that our language is clear. We have to make sure that we let people know that raising the debt ceiling does not authorize any more borrowing. See, that's one of the problems with the terms that we're using. Raising the debt ceiling does not authorize the government to borrow any more money. It doesn't authorize the government to borrow another dime than they've already been authorized to borrow. What it is that it's basically voting to pay the bills on the money that we've already spent. Basically, if you or I were to do what the Republicans are doing with the debt ceiling, that would be like you or I going out with our Visa card and charging $5,000 on our Visa card. Only when we've already bought the stuff. We've already got the stuff. We've already spent this money. Only when Visa sends us our bill, we say, you know, that wasn't very responsible of me. I shouldn't have spent all this money. So you know what? I'm not going to pay my credit card bill. And what would happen to you or I if we were to do that? Our credit rating would go in the toilet. Same thing happens to the country. As a matter of fact, the last time the Republicans threatened to not raise the debt ceiling, and then they did so at the last second, that was enough to cause the entire credit rating of the U.S. government to be downgraded, just because there were serious elements in our government that were flirting with not paying our bills, which, again, would have repercussions on the world economy. So it's so that's why it's important that the Democrats not cave on the government shutdown, because the debt ceiling is way more dangerous.
Wow.
And by the way, you know, that's the thing too, is that the debt ceiling was raised under George W. Bush something like 12, 13 times in 8 years. It just used to be a matter of fact. It used to be a matter of course. I really think they need to do basically, there's this idea the Republicans had, which I think is the smartest idea they've had in years, not for the reason that they wanted it, though. There was, what's his name? Droopy Dog Turtle from the Senate, from Tennessee. You know what I'm talking about? I don't like you. He's the Senate Minority Leader, and my brain is farting on me right now. Meanwhile, people at home are going, oh, you idiot, you're a pundit, and you don't remember the Minority Leader's name.
It's Robert something, right?
What?
See, now my sister is way better with politics than I am, but I think it's Robert?
No.
Okay.
Not Grassley. It's, God. Anyway, Senator... What?
No.
Harry Reid?
Not Harry Reid. No.
Harry Reid
is
the majority leader. He's not,
yeah, no,
I don't have
no.
my computer up here either.
Let me look it up.
Republican,
I'm
minority leader, Senate minority leader.
Mitch McConnell?
Mitch McConnell!
There
yeah.
you go.
Good old Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell had this idea. He had this idea where the Republicans would pass a bill that the Democrats would vote for, which would basically make the decision to raise the debt ceiling transfer it from the Congress to the president. And basically where the president could raise the debt ceiling whenever the president wanted to, and then if Congress decided that he shouldn't do it, they would have to pass a bill saying, no, you're not going to do this. So basically, they were going to create a situation where, in order for the president to not be able to raise the debt limit, the Congress would have to pass a bill, and the president would have to sign a bill saying, "Oh, I can't do this." basically would have put the power in the president's hands. The Republicans are so convinced that they've got people snowed on the debt limit that if they put it in the president's hand and he just kept raising the debt limit every time, that that's something that they could try to use in an election to attack Democrats with. The fact of the matter is most people are just fucking bored when you talk about the debt limit. When people find out what it really is, they're horrified that Republicans would want to play a game with it. And I actually think it would be the smartest thing to do just to let whatever president, because you know what? Every president is going to raise the debt limit when it's needed. None of them are, you know, none of them are that stupid to say, oh, well, I'm not going to do it and just fuck my country in the ass. So I would like to see the McConnell plan go forward just to give President Obama the authority to raise the debt ceiling whenever it happened. And if Congress didn't like it, they could pull together a 2/3 majority to say, oh, no, you can't do that, which we know wouldn't happen. It would basically take this very, very dangerous hostage off the table. I am 100% behind the McConnell plan to deal with the debt ceiling on a permanent basis. Bet you never thought you'd hear me say that. But
but I understand.
They think it would be a political. They think it would be a political hot potato. I think it would be a political lead balloon. It really wouldn't. Nobody would really care. But
that's amazing. I'm still dealing with the fact that you agreed with anything that Mitch McConnell has ever said. But okay, I'm going there with you.
Mitch McConnell is an old-fashioned, what I call a Bob Dole Republican. He's somebody who just basically, he'll give lip service to the social conservatives, but his big thing is taxes, spending, and defense spending. Tennessee has some very rich defense contracts. So he wants to make sure that the Pentagon gets funded. The guy's an old-fashioned Republican. He's like, look, give me my tax cuts, and the rest of it you can go play with. He doesn't want to deal with debt ceilings. He does, but he can't come out and say, I'm against the Republicans using the debt ceiling as a hostage, because he's already got a Tea Party challenger in his next primary. The Republicans are primarying him from the right. And Tennessee is crazy enough of a place, he may wind up losing his job in the primary. Of course, that would make whoever the Democrats run that much easier to get elected, because the guy, I can't remember the guy's name, but the guy who's running against McConnell for the Republican nomination for Senate from Tennessee, this guy makes Todd Akin look like Al Franken. So it's the guy's a complete fucking whack job. I mean, literally, he's a complete fucking whack job. I mean, this guy has come out and said that the big problem with Rick Santorum is that he's too liberal. That's what this guy said. So that's how fucking whacked out this guy is. This guy is way too crazy even for Tennessee. So it's going to help us widen our margin in the Senate. It's really funny because every time, the last three election cycles, including this next one coming up, people have kept saying, well, according to conventional wisdom, Republicans should have a chance to take control of the Senate, just taking a look at how many seats the Republicans have to defend versus how many seats the Democrats have to defend, how many incumbents are there, yada, yada, yada. There's all these things that go into figuring out if an election is going to be easy or difficult for a particular party. Last two elections in a row, the Republicans were supposed to be poised to take control of the Senate. Not only have they not taken control of the Senate, they've actually seen their numbers in the Senate go down by one or two people every time. So every time they're supposed to win the Senate, they not only lose the Senate, they get even farther away from winning the Senate. And that's because these Tea Party challengers come in and they win nominations. The Republican Party, first of all, only 23% of the people in this country identify as Republican. It's a very small number. And out of all the people who identify, 23% total of the U.S. population identifies as Republican. When you take a look at out of that 23% of the American populace, only about 30% of them actually vote in Republican primaries. Now, I don't have the math. I'm not going to do it because big numbers, I don't do good with big numbers. But think about 30%. I mean, I don't know what 23% of the country is, but only 30% of them actually take part. which basically means that you've got the most extreme right-wing elements. They're always the most motivated to vote in a Republican primary. And so it's the right-wing and the jihadists who control the nomination process. I mean, take a look at this. Think about in the 1990s, a Republican hardcore right-winger was somebody who was against abortion. In the 1990s, you still had Republican members of the House and Senate who could be pro-choice. They might be moderately pro-choice, but they were certainly in favor of abortion in at least some instances. Nowadays, in the Republican Party, a moderate is somebody who favors an exception for rape, incest, or the life of the mother in case of abortion. In the 90s, that person still would have been considered a right-winger because they were for outlawing abortions except in these cases. The idea, the number of people who were for outlawing all abortions no matter what with no exceptions really didn't exist in the 90s. But now in the Republican Party, the hardcore right-wingers are ones who want to basically, it's like, oh, a guy raped you? Well, guess what? You get to keep his rape baby. And, oh, guess what? In the South, you know, your rapist gets to have parental rights, and you don't have to deal with him for the next 18 years. You know, a little gift from the Republican Party to you women.
Wow.
And those are the moderates are the ones who are out into outlawing abortion but will allow exceptions for rape or incest or the life of the mother, maybe. They're still kind of fuzzy on that last part. And the thing is that that's how far right-wing this party has gotten, and it's because the hardcore right-wingers are the ones who control the nomination process. So nominating campaigns these days tend to be a game of who can be more conservative, who can go harder to the right, who can be more batshit fucking insane. And that tends to be what the nomination process is like in the Republican Party. So, so they become experts at snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. Todd Akin, Richard Murdoch, Christine O'Donnell, these are all people who took races that the Republicans should have won very easily, and they handed them on a silver platter to the Democrats. And it's happening again. It's happening over and over again. So it's really funny just to watch. I mean, it's like, God, you guys are acting like Democrats did in the 80s. This is kind of eerie.
It's true. That's their, and I was just thinking that because they used to say that about the Democratic Party, that we knew how
to
snatch.
If the Democrats got in a firing squad, they'd get in a circle. Yeah.
Exactly. And it's fascinating to me to see this turn around. The thing that scares me, though, is that the more this goes on, it just seems like the Republicans have not learned that crazy isn't getting it. They just keep throwing out these psychotic candidates that are really kind of terrifying to me.
Mm-hmm. But
and
again, it's going to be a game.
Yet.
It's like what happened in Ohio, though, because Republicans are finding that there are limits that, you know, that a lot of places in the country will have. They can't just throw anybody out there and expect them to walk away with the election anymore. Again, because, you know, Todd Akin, Richard Murdoch, all these people, they should have been able to walk away with it because Todd Akin was running in Missouri. Now, he was running against a woman named Claire McCaskill, who's a Democrat. She was a fresh Democrat. This was her first reelection campaign that she had last year. She had very high negatives. I mean, you know, Missouri is swinging really hardcore red when it comes to their politics these days. They've really taken a turn for the extreme conservative. And Claire McCaskill was a woman, and even though she was a moderate Democrat, she was still a Democrat, and she still did things like vote for Obamacare, she votes for immigration reform, and all this stuff. She was seen as extremely vulnerable. As a matter of fact, if you talk to most Democrats in 2011, they were going to say, yeah, you know what, we're going to lose Missouri. It's just going to happen, but we just got to make sure that we make it up somewhere else. And she should have walked, and she should have been ridden out of town on a rail. The Republicans had an establishment candidate that they wanted to run against her. Basically, your boring, vanilla Republican, cut taxes, spend more money on defense, yada, yada, yada. This guy lost his primary to Todd Akin because Todd Akin had the Tea Party on his side, and he had religious conservatives on his side. And Todd Akin walked away with the nomination. And then, and the thing is, Todd had always had this habit of saying really stupid shit. It's not like he suddenly, you know, grew an extra foot in his mouth overnight. This guy was well practiced at saying stupid stuff. And there was actually an entire team of Republicans whose job it was to try to filter him. They were trying to get as much through them as possible. So, like, when this guy, when Todd Akin would do email interviews, all the answers would run through the smart guys so that they could uncrazy it. But then they put the guy in front of a live camera where he came out with his legitimate rape. If it's a legitimate rape, the woman's body has a way of shutting that whole thing down. And again, that was him trying to justify not having an exception for rape victims in terms of abortion. Basically, it's a right-wing bit of snake oil where they say, oh, rape women don't really get pregnant. So if a woman says she was raped and she's pregnant, she's lying. They leave that part off. But that's part of the Republican dogma. And he was just saying the kind of stuff that when Republicans say it to each other behind closed doors, they get all these people going, oh, yeah, yeah, you're right. Yeah, of course, perfect. He said it out in front of a bunch of people in front of a live mic. And not only that, but once he said that and people went, what the fuck? Then all of a sudden they started looking at other shit he said and started to realize that this guy was just fucking crazy to the point where even Missouri had to go, you know what? We hate her. We think she's incompetent. We think she's dangerous. We think she's an idiot. But she's not crazy. She's just not crazy. So, and this, that's happened over and over and over again. And it's going to happen again this cycle because all the people who are talking about running for various top Republican spots are all part of, I mean, now you're starting to see members of the House of Representatives, the House caucus, the crazy ass motherfuckers who got us into the government shutdown. These guys want to get a promotion and they're going to start running for Senate. So,
That's
made the RNC, you know, just completely shit turn up. As a matter of fact, I saw an interview recently with Michael Steele, who was the head of the Republican National Committee. Just to show you, and this is something I like to point out to people who try to say that, you know, oh, we have Michael Steele. That proves that the Republican Party has dealt with its institutional racism. Look, when Michael Steele was running the Republican Party, they took control of the House and they fired him. Rince Priebus has been around and lost three election cycles in a row since then. They keep him around. They keep the white guy around. But Michael Steele recently said that he was kind of glad that he wasn't having to try to run this party because he couldn't do it. There'd be no way he could do it. And this is a guy who won a major election for them in 2010. And he's just like, I can't do it. There's no way I could do that. So he doesn't envy Rince Priebus of his job right now. And Rince is just a little too... I think Rince Priebus is just, I think his name's like Rick Prescott, but I think the guy's just so drunk. He's like, my name's Rince Priebus. But anyway. complete and utter morons. But it's just so fun. And, you know, I want to say something too real quick to the people on the left, because I know most of the people listening to this, hold on, let me plug this phone in back again. Hold on here. Okay, still there?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me say something to people on the left, okay? I know that a lot of people who are involved in politics now, not just younger people, but even people my age, you know, there's a lot of people who only got really hooked into politics. They really became aware of politics since 2000. That's 13 years on now. I know there's a lot of people who really weren't, they didn't pay that much attention to politics in the 90s because a lot of people didn't. We had prosperity. We had peace in the 90s. People tend not to pay a lot of attention to politics when you've got peace and prosperity. It's understandable. And I know that for most people, the only example they've ever had for foreign affairs is watching George W. Bush. Watching George W. Bush want so bad to go and bomb some brown people that he would pretend to do diplomacy and then screw it up, double-cross the diplomats, and go to war anyway. And that he never turned down an opportunity to bomb some poor brown Muslim people. Okay, I know that's the example that people on the left have grown up with for the last decade plus. But But after watching people running around with their hair on fire over Syria, I just want to say, we're not there anymore, people. We're not there anymore. We're not dealing with George W. Bush and Dick Cheney's campaign to buy lots and lots of bombs and bullets from Halliburton. We're not there anymore. When I saw people on the left, when President Obama made threats against Syria, people on the left started running around going, oh, my God, he's a warmonger. Oh, my God, he's going to get us into another war. It's going to be Iraq all over again. Oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. It's like, calm down. Have some smoke this. Mellow out. It's like, look, this is – and now people are saying, well, he was really lucky things worked out that way. No, no, no. That's diplomacy. What was going on in Syria was the Assad regime was fucking brutal. They still are fucking brutal. And the rebels are brutal, too. There's not a whole lot of people that we can really say, oh, well, their G. Willikers great. But the Assad regime, very brutal. The Assad regime had been threatening to use chemical weapons against the rebels for some time. The U.S. had been trying to get the European powers to step in and say, look, Europe, you guys are going to get the refugees if this goes really fucking bad. You guys have way more of an economic stake in Syria than we do. Europe needs to step up and do something about this guy and keep him from using chemical weapons on his own people. And Europe didn't want to do it. They didn't want to deal with it. They would much rather close their eyes and hope the situation just goes away. Russia didn't want to do anything about it. China didn't want it. Nobody wanted to do anything about this regime. So basically what really happened was nobody's really sure if Assad gave the go-ahead to use the chemical weapons. Someone in his government did. One of his generals started to do a chemical weapons attack with sarin gas. And this isn't the type of thing where somebody sniffs some gas and falls over instantly dead. This is men, women, and children dying slowly over a 48-hour period after they get a whiff of this stuff. It shuts down your organs. People die very slowly on this. Once they use the chemical weapons, President Obama said, okay, enough's enough. Chemical weapons are banned internationally. Even though Syria didn't sign on to the chemical weapons treaty, too fucking bad. Nobody gets to use these chemical weapons. Nobody gets to use them. And if nobody else is going to do anything about it, we're going to do something about it. We're going to bomb the chemical weapons facilities. We're going to bomb the Air Force that they use to deliver this stuff. We're going to take care of business. And he was deadly serious. And he started doing things like repositioning troops in the Middle East to be ready for a strike. Just everything saying, we're going to do this. And that's when people started running around with their hair on fire. The thing what happened was is that the Russians are Syrian allies. Now, the Russians didn't want to look like they were giving in to us. So they had to talk all tough and say, oh, don't you invade them or else we'll be there waiting for you, yada, yada, yada. But privately, Russia went to Syria and said, look, we're not getting into a war for you idiots, okay? So this is what you're going to do. You use the chemical weapons, now you lose them. You sign the International Test Ban Treaty, the International Chemical Weapons Treaty, and you hand your chemical weapons over to the UN, and Russia said that, you know, we're not going to stand in the way of the UN passing a Security Council resolution that says if you guys try to renege on your deal to hand all your chemical weapons over to the UN, then the UN is going to bomb your ass. So basically, the U.S. got everything we wanted. Syria's getting rid of its chemical weapons. The U.N. is going to enforce it. We're not going to have to. We don't have to play world police on this. The U.N. is going to do it. And it all happened because President Obama said, if you people aren't going to do anything about it, we're going to do something about it. And the rest of the world decided, okay, we'll do something about it. That's called diplomacy. That's how it's run. Diplomacy is not a bunch of genteel old English dudes drinking tea in some in some mansion somewhere and saying pip pip cheerio and all that stuff. No, diplomacy is hands on. It's rough and tumble. Diplomacy has to be backed up by a credible threat of military force because there's a lot of countries that will not take you seriously unless they're looking down the business end of a Tomahawk cruise missile. At no point did President Obama want to bomb Syria. And all along he said that this wasn't going to be Iraq because we weren't going to invade. We weren't going to put boots on the ground. But he didn't even really want to bomb them. He wanted the world community to do something about it. That's exactly what happened. And also, as a side effect of that, once the Iranians saw how serious he was about holding Syria to international standards, now Iran, President Obama and the newly elected president of Iran spoke on the phone. It's the first time the two countries have spoken since 1979. And now Iran is talking about entering into negotiations to negotiate away their nuclear program, which is something that Republicans have wanted to bomb Iran about for about 12 years now. As a matter of fact, that was one of the targets that that Don Rumsfeld wanted to bomb after 9/11. He wanted to bomb Iranian nuclear sites because what the hell, if we're going to drop bombs, what's a few more? The Iranians are actually talking about negotiating away their nuclear program, all because real diplomacy has returned to the international stage, American style. So the next time you hear, oh, well, you know, if this doesn't happen, we're going to take military action, don't run around with your hair on fire saying, Obama's a warmonger. Oh, no, what happened? Oh, my God, my unicorn's dying. No. just know. This is diplomacy, bitches. This is how it happens.
Wow.
I had to get that off my chest because I didn't get to say that last time. And that, I was going to say last time, you watch,
know.
You know, within a week and a half, this is all going to be taken care of, and I didn't get a chance to say that. So, yeah, but.
True.
Well, I'm glad you did this time.
Blog
Me
Talk
too.
Radio robbed me of the chance of being right again, goddammit. Anyway.
Not this time, not so quickly. Well,
not
I have
least
to tell
time.
You, it's true. You know, when you were on last time, I really wanted to talk about the whole Syrian thing. And then it kind of, you know, after Blog Talk Radio went pissed for a few there, you know, the whole Syrian situation went pissed as well. So, it's been amazing how quickly that situation seemed to go away.
It did, because that's, again, it's real diplomacy. And, you know, the incredible thing is that once 2016 rolls around and we get Hillary into the presidency, most of the diplomacy that's going on right now, she laid all the groundwork when she was Secretary of State. So she's going to be able to walk in, bring her people in, and she's going to be able to keep the diplomacy train running in the Middle East. We're looking at, we could have a good, solid 12 years of really genuinely great Middle Eastern diplomacy, from the U.S. Because of the Obama-Clinton the Obama-Clinton 16-year stretch. So
that would be awesome.
The
only thing that could top that is to get Elizabeth Warren in there with her.
Yeah, well, Clinton Warren, 2016.
Oh, yes, that is a ticket I could stand behind big time.
Oh, my God, are you kidding? That's a dream ticket right there.
It is. We would actually get the economy back on track with her.
Oh, my God, because Elizabeth Warren really knows her economics. So let me tell you this, too, the way things are shaping up right now, with all of the people who are potentially running from the Republican Party. Now, of course, things can change, but with the people who they're talking about running right now, the Republicans are terrified, which, by the way, is why they keep trying to flog Benghazi, because they think that they're going to use that somehow to damage Hillary Clinton. They're only damaging themselves, but that's why you're going to hear a lot of Benghazi in the next 3 years. They're not going to let that go because they're terrified of Hillary Clinton. The fact of the matter is that if an election were held tomorrow with Hillary Clinton versus anybody on the Republican side, you'd be looking at Hillary would win all of Obama's states, which would hand her the presidency, but she would also walk away. She would also walk away, of course, with Arkansas. She would walk away with North Carolina, and she would also walk away with Texas and Florida.
Wow.
Oh,
yes.
That's like unstoppable.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
Yes. That, you know, you, if you see a situation where somebody's going to win California, New York, Texas, and Florida, that's it. That's it.
Yeah. Oh,
so
in
that's,
your mouth.
And say what?
Saying from your mouth to goddess's ears.
Well, think about this too. I mean, there are a lot of, I mean, there are states the last time that were close that shouldn't have been. Ohio was way closer than it shouldn't have, than it should have been, just because of our economics here. But like I've been telling people, you watch. I hate to say it, but once you get a white woman on the ticket, you're going to see even more. You're going to see even more votes come home, because there are people on the left who are racist who don't want to admit it. So they're the ones walking around saying, "Oh well, you know, Obama, he's just like the Republicans, man. He's just a big Monsanto lackey and all that." They don't want to admit that they're kind of sketchy about a black dude being president too. So they come up with their own bullshit. But again, you know, North Carolina is going to be a solidly Democratic state with Hillary Clinton running. Arkansas, because she has her history there. I mean, and like I said, Texas right now, I mean, Hillary Clinton has beaten absolutely everybody who could possibly run in Texas by anywhere from 5 to 20 points. So the only person who would make it close as of right now would be Chris Christie. Now, Chris Christie, once the rest of the country sees what he's really like, they're not going to like him anyway. He'll never play in the Midwest. But Chris Christie will never get the Republican nomination. He doesn't hate gay people and women enough. So
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
so he's
and
not
he
going to get
nice
the nomination.
And he made nice with the president. So.
He was actually trying to work with the federal government to make sure his people didn't starve. So you know.
I got to say, well, first of all, we got to wrap up in a minute here because we're at about 3 minutes. But I got to say, I'm obviously not a Republican, you know, but I like him. I don't know what it is about him. Maybe because I'm a fellow, you know, I was born in New Jersey.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe
he plays much better in New Jersey, but he's not going to play in the Midwest. He's a little bit too, you know, he's a little bit too Tony Soprano for the Midwest.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. I was going to say, I didn't think that was going to work considering he's got a buttload of attitude. You never know. I mean, things happen. Things change. So, I mean, he may do a lot of changing in the next little bit until our next election. I don't think he would ever make it as a president.
No, he's not going to get the nomination because he's not batshit crazy enough for the Republicans.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's something we even need to really think about. I don't see him as a credible threat to Hillary.
And he'll make things really interesting in the Republican campaign.
Yeah, well, you know what? It'll make for interesting debates for a while. But quite frankly, I don't really see where there's a possible Republican ticket that could take Hillary Clinton and whoever she decides to have with her.
There isn't, but I just want to see Chris Christie debating with Rand Paul, because I want to see Chris Christie knock that little twerp down to size. Rand Paul's going to go down like Paris Hilton at a kegger. It's going to be great. But,
oh, that was awesome.
And on that note,
I'm telling you, every time we run out of time, we love talking to our guests. You know,
ourselves.
I just
want to
say real quick before I go,
awesome.
Everybody up there, come on by my Facebook page. I've got a new eBay store that I'm selling classic vinyl hard rock LPs, sci-fi toys, Star Wars puzzles, and movies and DVDs. So come on by my Facebook page whenever I post something on my eBay. I'll put it up there, and you can come and see what kind of lovely, fun stuff I'm selling from the nostalgia end of things. So
awesome.
And
the link is in the show description, so just hit that, or you can go through our blog. All of his information is on our blog.
Yes.
But it has been awesome. Yay, we made it through the show.
Yay.
We can't wait to have you on next month. See what hijinks the Washington folk get up to in between.
Oh, I'll have plenty of fun stuff to talk about next time.
Awesome.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, thank you, everybody. And everyone be awesome to each other. And remember, friends don't let friends vote Republican.
Right on.
There you go.
Right on. Love you. Very
love you.
Thank you again.
Bye. Okay. We have a few seconds left. I just wanted to mention that Dorothy Morrison will be on next week, and we will be back. And, yeah, you were right. It was the 15th that
okay.
that you're taking off for the Eagle.
Yay.
I like that thing. But you want to wrap us out? Yo, yo, yo.
No. You do
no.
Threw you there. Threw her there.
All right. We love you guys. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week. Bright blessings.
Love y'all.